Hello, and welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast. I'm your host, Geoffrey Hart, aka Geoffrey the Natural Builder. Building Sustainability consists of conversations with designers, builders, makers, dreamers, and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Hello, and welcome to episode 45. So, before we start, I want to say a massive thanks to Henrietta Dale, Roland Keeble, Philippa Battier, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Philippa, and Colin McClelland. They have all joined the Building Sustainability Patreon since the last episode. So your support is so massively appreciated. I hope that you are enjoying all of the bonus audio that is available to the Patreon subscribers. If you would like to join, there is a link in the show notes, or you can go to patreon.com/buildingsustainability. I also wanted to say thank you to Roland Keeble again. Not only is he now a Patreon supporter of the podcast, he has created two fantastic bite-sized episodes all about the wonders of clay. And I thought I knew quite a lot about clay. It's one of my main building materials. But I learned a lot of new information, so make sure you check those out. They are bite-sized episodes which should pop up in your feed, same as any other. Also wanted to put a shout out, if you have a topic that you think you'd like to discuss in a bite-sized episode, then get in contact via the website. That is buildingsustainabilitypodcast.com. Yeah, drop us a message and highlight what it is you'd like to talk about. While on the website, it has been revamped recently. So now, if you're listening to an episode, you can click on one of the categories that that episode is listed in, and you'll find a whole list of other episodes that are related. And you can also get in contact. You can leave reviews. You can read up on the guests. You'll find links to all their websites. Hopefully it's a lot easier. Okay, so this episode is with Martin Brown, and I was made aware of Martin's excellent work because he was a fellow finalist in the ASBP Awards this year. He was in the final for his sessions called Zoom Regenerative. I have attended some of those, and I thought they were fantastic. And Martin will tell you more about those in the episode. We also talk about the Living Building Challenge, which I touched on in the last episode with Chris Magwood. So we go into a fair amount of depth on that. And, I mean, this is another episode where there's just so much information given out. And so there are many, many links from this discussion that are all in the show notes. So make sure you get stuck into them after listening. And I've also popped a link to Martin's Regen Notes, which is his bi-weekly newsletter, which is an excellent read if the topic of this episode tickles your interests. Okay, I'm back at the end. Enjoy the episode, and apologies for the little yappy dog that comes up about halfway through this episode. There are some things about boat life I might not miss. Okay, enjoy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yeah, and I've given myself a title of sustainability provocateur. I think anyone who's a consultant really struggles with the word consultancy. It doesn't quite describe what to do. Mm-hmm. And it must be about 3 years or so ago, I was doing a TEDx type presentation, and I was asked for my title, and I was told I could not use consultancy in that sort of context. So more or less on the spur of the moment, we sort of brainstormed a few things that it's stuck on on provocateur. And that's good, actually, because it actually gives me the opportunity to poke and provoke and in a nice, pleasant way and just challenge people what they're doing. That's the title I've given me. But to go back into a quick-potted career as to why mm-hmm. I got here, and we can explore various aspects of that. As you know, Jeffrey grew up in Keynsham. Mm-hmm. So I started my...
You're connecting back to your roots now, right now.
Exactly. So I started my construction career in Bath. I was based in Keynsham. And that was as a quantity surveyor, then a site engineer. Then off to university, then became a site manager, project manager, mostly in the UK, but an expat stint in Trinidad and Tobago, in Boston, and then around the UK. So Southwest, Southeast, Midlands, and then up into North. It was about 20 years ago, I moved away from mainstream employment, mainstream contracting, into consultancy. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was the year 2000, so 21 years.
Okay.
The tail end of my mainstream employment was for a main contractor as a built environment business improvement manager director.
Okay.
Just trying to remember what titles I had in the past. And I'd realized the service I was giving, I could give wider than just through a main contractor. Mm-hmm. So I took the plunge, year 2000, became a self-employed.
Was that the first time you had sort of sustainability in the title, or when did that come in?
Sustainability was something, one of the reasons I wanted to move into independence. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it was probably more focused in environmental management within the context of business improvement than sustainability as a wider regenerative, planet saving, carbon reducing, all those sort of things.
Yes.
So it was around sort of 14,001 environmental management. And then slowly that's morphed into where we are today, which is a real focus on regenerative. I firmly believe we no longer have the luxury to continue just reducing impact, mm-hmm. and we need to do far much more.
Well, yeah, I mean, regenerative is a word I think will come up a lot today. So why don't you give a sort of definition of what that means, sort of certainly within the built environment?
Yeah, as I say, we no longer have the luxury just to reduce impact. There's a sustainability definition I hooked onto a while back. It came from Yvon Chouinard at Patagonia. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be using the word sustainability until we're given as much, if not more, back than we take.
Yeah.
So that could be from the environment, from nature, from people we work with, from communities we work in. Yeah, we can't just keep taking. And actually having that balance is not the right thing. Mm-hmm. So we need to push up forward. And my view on regenerative is giving back more than we take.
Okay.
Over decades, especially built environment, we haven't been good on the environment. We haven't been good on communities. Mm-hmm. So there's a sort of idea that we have to heal things as well. We have to heal the future, another expression I use.
Yeah. Um,
So anything we really do should be have that doing better, doing yeah. more good aspect to it.
Lucy Pedler from the Green Register, she when she gives a talk, she says, you know, sustainable is something that we can keep doing forever. You know, it's not depleting anything. And so you're sort of talking about going one stage further, and instead of not depleting and staying in equilibrium, we're actually giving back.
Yeah, exactly. And that cropped up in some reading over the weekend, actually, when reading about net zero carbon, mm-hmm. whether net zero carbon is actually the right thing to be focusing on at the moment.
Okay.
And it should be zero carbon. Yeah. Net zero carbon is just going to keep the same amount of carbon in the atmosphere, but we have to be more regenerative and do better things. Yeah.
Well, let's come back to that sort of net zero
sure.
point.
Yeah, jumping around. But yeah.
No, it's okay. I find the idea of, a building that is giving back, I find that a bit of a mind-bending sort of concept to grasp, I guess. Sort of knowing, you know, all the materials that we put into a building, you know, and all the processes that have gone to making them, how they could possibly be sort of, a positive impact rather than a negative one.
People often ask for examples of how a building can be regenerative. There's a few I cite. There's within the Living Building Challenge, for example, within the energy panel. We'll come to Living Building Challenge, I'm sure, in more detail later. But there's a requirement to produce 105% of the energy the building requires without using fossil fuels, or rather without combustion. Mm-hmm. So that extra 5% can be used for additional items.
Okay.
And through renewables, it's easy to produce more than we need for an individual building.
Mm-hmm.
And that could supply local buildings, roundabouts. It could be stored for future use.
Yeah. I guess where I get stuck is that, say, solar panels, they contain precious metals, don't they, which are non-renewable. How do you sort of where's the justification in that? I know. I don't imagine that there's any one perfect system, but
exactly.
Yeah.
My view on that, you're quite right. There's no one perfect system, and we need to live with these. In some ways, the harm caused by the chemicals in the solar panels is small compared to the harm done by fossil fuels, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to put the research and development funding into producing less toxic solar panels, as we've done into the fossil fuel industry, then we'll get there faster.
Right.
Yeah. This, and again, with Living Building Challenge, there's sort of exemptions for that. It's very hot on keeping toxic materials out of buildings.
Yeah.
But it appreciates at the moment we don't have the technology. But through things like that, we can force the hand and create the demand for better.
I suppose acknowledging that that's a sort of sticking point is a good way of getting it dealt with sooner, rather than just pretending it's the solution.
Yeah, and at the same time, though, we can be much better at designing for a lower energy demand.
Mm-hmm.
Our lifestyles within buildings can be better at using energy.
Where was I going to start? Well, first of all, congratulations on being a finalist in the ASBP.
Likewise to yourself.
how did you find that whole sort of experience? I mean, I almost called it a competition then, but I didn't really feel like it was a competition.
No. I would agree. I didn't see it as a competition. I was delighted to be in the finalists and delighted to share it during the awards session.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the delight came from being able to promote what we're doing with Zoom Regenerative, where we've got to.
Yeah.
Which started as a very little project. I think it would last for a couple of months or so. And it's now gone on for a year.
Yeah. And that was in direct response to the lockdown, was it?
Yes, it was. Over the recent years, I spent a lot of time organising events, organising speakers, speaking at events, etc. I'd see it as one of my key advocacy type things. Let's keep talking and sharing these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the lockdown came around, it sort of made sense to move that onto an online platform, and we ended up on Zoom. And at the same time, there are a few other things happening, particularly that article in the Financial Times by Arundhati Roy, who compares the pandemic as a portal. That's mm-hmm. what that's. We need to really know what's happening around the world in terms of what's good.
Yeah.
To be able to push forward with that.
So is it a very conscious decision to be a sort of global thing then?
Yes, yeah. Because I think we're pretty good through other means of sharing what's happening within the UK. Mm-hmm. There are numerous of forums, and most of those were on the in the finalists, long list or shortlist, including your podcast series. What we don't really do is learn too much from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to balance what we were doing in the UK with what's happening in Costa Rica and New Zealand or wherever.
Yeah. I saw that fascinating one a couple of weeks back from the person in Egypt and the work they're doing. Oh, sorry, I've forgotten her name.
Yeah, Amira.
That's it, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, as you're saying, the idea of a portal, because the lockdown did in some ways open up the being able to get people from around the world without having to go through the moral dilemma of do we fly them over here for a conference. So what sort of people have you had on who have been your guest speakers?
All sorts, all ages, all aspects. What I set out to do, and I've got a few people helping me, like Anna Williamson, etc. Mm-hmm. What we really want to do is just mash everything up. So it was brilliant to bring someone who's talking about mainstream design, also with someone talking about biking in Seattle, for example, mm-hmm. Because the clash of those two ideas, which you probably wouldn't necessarily relate straight away within a normal conference or a normal event.
Yeah,
they just led to some wonderful discussions, and often totally unrelated to the first two presentations.
Yeah.
So that they act as sort of a catalyst for thinking and for sharing ideas. And I think because people have sort of dropped in to share their insights, not really the key focus, they're brilliant, and but it's the conversation, the community, which is built up around that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the things that really struck me. Because I sort of saw what we were doing as quite similar in terms of looking at sustainability with quite a wide lens, but then the real difference was that conversation, and I suddenly realised quite how little feedback I get from the podcast, whereas you were creating like a little bubble of discussion. It was really fantastic to be part of.
Oh, thanks. So I mean, We've had a number of that sort of cluster of topics, especially around Latin America and Costa Rica, with Victor in Costa Rica doing some amazing things down there. And hearing about a city in Costa Rica, Curitibat, I think it's pronounced, which is a totally biophilic city,
mm-hmm.
Where they've given citizen rights to pollinators.
Right. Okay.
And citizen rights or human rights to land features like rivers, and realizing that success of what we do,
mm-hmm.
Either from a well-being or a business point of view, depends on nature to that degree.
Yeah.
And then we had another cluster of sessions from Australia and New Zealand, which really dug down into the concept of place and the importance of place,
mm-hmm.
especially to Indigenous people, and the whole history of that, which is something we're only starting to get to grips with here in the UK. You don't really have a sense of place. You're saying you're disconnected from land,
mm-hmm.
physically disconnected in this case, but I think most of us are.
Yeah.
And our buildings reinforce that. Little in a building anchors it in that place.
Yes. Biophilic is one of those terms that somehow escaped me for quite a long time, and then just at the beginning of sometime last year, I heard it. And then it's one of those things where I'm now seeing it everywhere I look. And that's as well as sort of placing yourself in natural surroundings. It's sort of giving you a view of natural surroundings and really making you part of it, if I'm understanding it correctly.
And
I was thinking a lot about how we, all the sort of standard houses that I've ever lived in, where that was you know, it was very much a separation from nature. So the opposite.
Yeah, indeed. And I think we're starting to learn a lot about that. And you're right, it's under the tag of biophilia, love of nature, love of life, et cetera. We are sort of going deeper into how does nature actually make us feel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how does that view make us feel? Or if there's no view in nature, how do we feel about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got that sort of compassion thing going on. What are we actually sensing?
Yeah.
Are we sensing change in temperatures? Are we sensing change in light? Circadian changing of light during the day.
Yeah.
Rather than just having greenery around and views out onto nice pastures and fields.
That's interesting because in your last session, there was John Renwick, was that his name?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm terrible with names today. He was talking about Ayurvedic architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm designing my tiny house at the moment. And he was talking about the way, you know, you place certain buildings in certain,
orientation.
Orientation. Yes, there you go. So, you know, your sort of kitchen will be in the east, and then your sitting room in the west, and that's relating to the different light coming round during the day. I found it fascinating because in my designs that I've got for my house, I'd always had it completely flipped. And it was a very simple process to say, oh, well, actually, yes, I want the morning light there in the kitchen when I'm making my breakfast. I've just flipped the whole design based on that conversation. So that's
brilliant. And that was an eye for me. I'd sort of been aware of Vastu or architecture for a while, but just as a concept, somewhere hidden in the depths of architectural schools or dusty books. So it was good to hear from John. And I just wonder how many people were thinking he was just speaking. Does my desk face east? Which way round do I sleep? How does that apply? So, that was good. And I was particularly pleased at the end of that session where, Daryl from Trinidad was able to share that project.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, I used to live there, so that was a real nice little anchor. But and I hope to get the architect back from. Back onto Zoom Regenerative to go into more detail about the design of that.
Yeah.
Because the connection between Vastu and Living Building Challenge it could be pretty mind-blowing. In fact, someone commented after the session saying that could be a dream. a dream way forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that sort of leads on to other things which have emerged through Zoom Regenerative in this sort of different level of awareness of our place, not just within nature, but in the universe, which is the meditation thing John was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how we've blocked all those energies.
Yeah,
and that sort of pops up in a lot of the regenerative sessions. With people, either practice mindfulness or TM or something along the way,
mm-hmm.
which gives them a totally different view on their designs and the way they go about their business.
How do you think it's going to develop the Zoom Regenerative?
Good question. But we're going to be coming out of lockdown, starting to get the vaccination program well underway. We're actually doing something right around the pandemic at the moment. The world's going to be hybrid. It's going to be different, very different to what it was before. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still a place. For things like Zoom Regenerative and podcasts, etc. I think people have now got used to soaking up knowledge and joining in conversations, engaging without having to travel to London or to the nearest city to do so. in fact, you can spend all your time 24/7 just engaged in webinars, conferences, etc. So, certainly a place. We were thinking about the name Zoom. Is that right to be attached to a platform? Somebody points out, well, it's actually about accelerating regenerative.
Yeah.
So zooming forward into the future.
Yeah, and also sort of zooming into the, looking at it in extreme detail.
And likewise zooming into detail.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so we'll probably keep that, but trying to get some strap lines around it. But one thing which emerged over the last few months, so people said they love the conversation, but sometimes feel that they can't really join in because they don't have the basics.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about living beyond challenge, we talk about circular economy, we talk about donuts, we talk about all sorts of things on a regular basis. So people are asking for, you know, where would I go to get a very simple 45 minutes tutorial on the basics, you know, ecology 101 sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we're looking to do that.
Oh, excellent.
And may pull back in some of the speakers in the past and say, okay, this is not a sharing of insights. This is not a sort of conversational thing. This is, okay, yeah, go for it on a presentation webinar approach. And just put the facts over. Excuse me. But at the same time, we want to keep that sort of friendly conversational bit within there.
Mm-hmm.
So that there will be a chance to question and to dig deeper.
Great.
So that's one way where it's going. There was another request which we need to explore later in the year, that we should have book authors,
yep,
as guests. So the idea of a book club where we would look at a particular book and then invite that author in for a Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
And we can continue to do that through Zoom around the world, even though we may be back to work on a building site or in an office.
Yes. Well, I've really enjoyed having, you know, that time to look forward to. You know, sort of putting it in my diary and having an evening event. And at the moment, I can't see it being any different as sort of life moves on. But then I am also aware that we're not particularly good at imagining, you know, the life beyond what we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, indeed. I don't think we're that good imagining the sort of future we want anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're struggling to see past COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how quickly we can get past, if we ever do. I think it's going to be living with coronavirus rather than getting past it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think we necessarily know what good looks like in terms of where we're going with the built environment, climate mm-hmm. change and ecological crisis, etc.
Yeah.
And if we can't really imagine what the future is going to be like, we're going to have trouble getting there.
Yes. Yes. And that's sort of the really powerful thing that Rob Hopkins does. He gets everyone to imagine that we've solved all the problems and what does it actually feel like? And then using that as a starting point to sort of go back and see the changes we need to make.
We've actually done that with one or two online sessions. Actually, we did it with a real life session before the pandemic through a European program I ran.
Mm-hmm.
Was involved in, but it's been a 4-year program under the name of Restore, Rethinking Sustainability Towards a Regenerative Economy, a nice little expression. So what would happen if someone picked up all that material from, you know, research, 4 years of research around Europe and actually put it into practice?
Mm-hmm.
What would that city look like in 10, 20 years' time? And we do struggle.
Definitely.
There's a lot of head scratching going on.
So there seems to be quite a lot of changes happening at the moment through a sort of range of from sort of grassroots up. What are you seeing at the moment that's sort of exciting and really working for you?
It's just that, actually, grassroots up. What I find really exciting are things like Architect Declare, Hagen, some of the work that Scott McCall is doing with the Anthropocene
mm-hmm.
School. You can see people sort of stepping outside of the established institutions, establishments, etc., and starting to do things for themselves, particularly around energy in London with LETI, the London Energy Transformation mm-hmm. Initiative, which has now become sort of adopted, as I understand, by many clients and projects. So I think there's a sense we cannot wait for legislation, we cannot wait for regulations and codes, etc. We need to push on and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that it really is a grassroots approach.
Yeah.
At the other end, I'm seeing contractors and developers really sort of pushing forward, with especially on carbon and ecology issues.
Yeah.
Running way ahead of building regulations or code around the world. And that's all very encouraging. Yeah.
Yes.
At the same time, though, I think our language, you know, we talked about zero carbon, net zero carbon. You know, there are hunting definitions and labels for that. You know, the difference between carbon positive and carbon negative is a depends who you talk to, a sort of nuanced difference.
Right.
And I think there's a danger that would enable people to hide behind those labels.
Mm-hmm. Is it sort of becoming the new green badge? Yeah, this is a green product. This is
exactly.
Yeah.
Because they can find a niche within all these labels and tags. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we're doing that. That means we're carbon neutral or carbon zero, whatever.
Maybe. Yeah. And so, what are the differences? You mentioned there's a difference between net zero and zero carbon.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, this is something I've just been looking at, really, and because I'm writing something at the end of that European thing. What is the difference? To really count as carbon reduction, it has to be taking carbon out of the atmosphere and tucking it away. So I'm either not emitting it in the first place or taking it out and reducing the amount which exists, locking it away in vegetation and soils and all sorts of things. And yeah, this is something I'm exploring, but yeah, I don't think maybe net zero is doing that. You know, is net zero just keeping us at a balance of what's already out there? Because we're just offsetting one way or another, or reducing that which we emit. There was a interesting debate last week over Mark Carney, ex-governor to Bank of England, now a COP26 advisor to our prime minister. And one of the organisations he heads up has declared themselves to be net zero. Net zero carbon, and they've done just through purchasing renewable companies. So you've got a fossil fuel emitting company. You buy a renewable company. You can use something called avoided emissions. So had that renewable company been a fossil fuel industry, it would have been X carbon. Now we're talking about Y carbon because it's much less.
Yeah.
So you can use that to offset the dirty stuff you were doing before.
Mm.
Now, we're talking mega bucks. I think it was 600 million tons of carbon a year. And so if we all went down that route, we all did that, then we're just not going to take carbon out of the atmosphere. We're just going to play around with numbers.
Yeah.
So I haven't articulated that too well. But I think that the bottom line, we need to be taking carbon out of the atmosphere. And that there are means where we can hide behind the words to not do that.
Yes.
Actually, I just mentioned something which I'm also thinking is the key thing. What if everyone did that?
Yeah,
so for good or for bad. Yeah, if we scaled that up to every business doing that, is that good or is that bad?
Yeah, that's interesting. I just went through that same thought process. I saw a presentation where a chap was talking about the pallet he was using was all from the local area, and it included South Downs chalk. And I thought, yeah, that's good. Yeah, chalk, nice natural material. But what if everyone was doing that? Are we then just depleting all the chalk, you know, mining it out of the earth? Oh, and then I went around in circles. It's hard work.
It is. Which is why we need sort of structures to guide us. The structure I'm using and promoting is the Living Building Challenge and those sort of things. There are others, but I think the LBC is quite good on its scope, robustness. But if we don't have those sort of structures, then we're we're taking the old scattergun approach. Yeah. Let's reduce carbon because everybody else is doing it. It's the thing to be doing. Not sure why we're doing it.
Yeah, it's the fashion.
Just jump in and do something.
Yeah.
Let's go and plant trees. And we need some sort of structure.
Yeah. Well, let's chat more about the Living Building Challenge because it's what is it?
Yeah, it describes itself as being fulfilling three things. Firstly, it's a philosophy of looking at the way we build in a different way, in a way which is attuned with nature, mm-hmm. And attuned with cultural issues and social issues. In fact, the strapline is looking for a future which is socially just, culturally rich, and ecologically robust, which Fantastic. Is quite a nice thing to move forward. It's a philosophy of getting people to think differently. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's advocacy that we should be sharing all this as wide as we can. And I forget who it was said just recently, might have been Attenborough, that the best thing we can do in the climate emergency debate is talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that's quite nice. I like that. And then thirdly, it's a certification scheme for those who want recognition for what they've been doing.
Yeah.
It's administered through ILFI, International Living Futures Institute, based in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's based in the Bullitt Center, which has the claim to be the greenest commercial building in the world. It's a claim it doesn't really want because it wants others to do better than that.
The current for your best.
That's right.
Yeah.
But so that's in many ways the flagship of the Living Building Challenge. But within there are a number of programs within the ILFI suite. Mm-hmm. There's the Living Building Challenge. There's a Living Community Challenge, which can be looking at a cluster of buildings, uh-huh. typically used in smaller states, university campuses, etc. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Living Product Challenge, which goes the other way, sort of zooms into the macro and looks at the products which are going into buildings.
So that, I mean, you're really looking at all the levels there, aren't you? Sort of the products in the buildings themselves, and the buildings within a development or,
Exactly. And then around that, there are a number of other little programs which all link together. So one is called Declare, which is about declaring the transparency of mm-hmm. materials, where it's come from, how it's used, where it's going to go, and what it contains.
Yeah.
So that's a very powerful one. That's based on one of the elements from the Living Building Challenge called the Red List.
Yes.
Which is a red list of 20 plus materials which are known to cause harm to humans or harm to the environment. So they're prohibited.
And are they things which... in a very sort of conventional house, you might find
absolutely all over the place.
Really,
I mean, you've got in there. You have the ones you'd expect, the asbestos, lead, etc. Mm-hmm. But the red list also looks at PVCs and plastic derivatives. It looks at formaldehyde, phthalates. Yeah, so many are in homes we've built and still continue to build, and all buildings, either in the construction materials or in the furniture and the finishings that we may be putting into the buildings. So Declare is it's likened to a food label, like you'd see on a pot of yogurt. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't say one's bad, one's good. It does by implication, but you can make a choice. You might want something more fat because that's what you want. So that's the yogurt you would choose.
Yeah.
So it enables you to choose a building product.
Yeah, I guess people have different demands, don't they? Different, I want an entirely non-toxic house. I want a super low energy house. I want a low upfront carbon house.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And then also depending on the ventilation system you put into a house, whether it's an existing building with lots of ventilation, an old home. You could probably bring in furniture which contains a little.
Yes.
Then often it's down to cost, but at least it's given you another choice item to make that choice.
Excellent.
Yeah. The other little program in there, it's not little, it's quite significant, is one called JUST.
Yeah.
JUST, which is how an organization is just in the way it goes about its business. And so that covers it's very much like the B Corp and the other programs, which looks at the stewardship of a, or the approach of a company towards stewardship of the environment, how it looks after its people, how it relates to human rights.
Excellent. So demanding sort of solid
but ethics. The core of the Living Building Challenge is it takes its metaphor from nature. Mm-hmm. It's firmly based on it. And it consists of seven petals, again, with the metaphor of a flower. In theory, in practice, a building sort of thrives in its location. Mm-hmm. Without fossil fuels, too much external input, so it pulls resources from the ground, it pulls energy from the sun and from the wind. Mm-hmm. Very much tuned into its place. It's toxic free. It's equity and has a degree of beauty. So the seven petals. One is place, which is all around the ecology, human and nature based design. Then we have energy, which is looking at the carbon element, but also the where you're getting your energy from on a net zero basis.
Is that energy in use, or is that energy for construction and
both? We're looking at embodied carbon, and we're looking at embodied energy and energy in use. And as I said earlier, there's a requirement of 105%. Without any combustion. And then there's a similar requirement on water, that the building has to take all its water from natural sources, ideally rain, but could be local water, of course. But ideally, that system should still be operating the same way as if the building wasn't there.
Okay.
So the building's just borrowing the water.
Got you.
So it can harvest, use it, clean it, put it back into the aquifers.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And there's a nice analogy with trees, which do just that.
Yeah,
it cleans the water, which falls onto it, takes what it needs and puts the rest back into the aquifer for trees roundabouts. Yeah, so we need to be doing the same there.
Excellent.
And then we materials is the one people really struggle with, just keeping those red list materials out. But there's a huge amount of material tracking to be done.
Yeah.
In terms of distance, there's restrictions on where you can get materials from, restrictions on the red list. There's a waste requirement that we should be using more waste materials, recycled content materials back into our buildings.
Okay.
The circular economy approach.
So using waste materials back in, that's always an interesting one for me, because I look at some of the sort of loft insulations, which is sort of plastic bottles that have been sort of spun into a fibre. And I think that's great that it's taking back that material, but then also health benefits of living with plastic. It's that sort of finding your own personal balance, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The other petal I was just going to move on to is the health and happiness petal, which looks at air quality.
Yeah.
So you had to maintain a level, a recognised level of air quality.
Okay.
Often it's the off-gassing from whatever chemicals in insulation, et cetera, which is going to maintain that.
Yes, I've been doing a lot of research about sort of flame retardants and things like that in sofas, in mattresses. And, the flame retardants are incredibly chemical things that don't even really stop it burning. They just stop it burning quite so fast, don't they?
Exactly.
And when they burn, they release even more chemicals.
And of course, this all relates to the groundfield, which is a whole other scenario.
Yeah.
What we're learning from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to go through the petals, the materials petal, people find the trickiest because of the level of tracking required for most materials.
Yeah.
To come into the building. And the unpreparedness of our material supply chains around the world. We do have the good non-toxic materials, but they're difficult to get hold of at scale.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue. Health and happiness is it's around comfort inside the building, but also the rights of access to nature, but those type of things.
And it's that happiness. Happiness is a difficult thing to quantify, isn't it? How is it?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a nice thing to throw, isn't it? Yeah, health and happiness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we are creating wonderful buildings, which are regenerative and they're sustainable and all those things, then yeah, one of the key measures should be happy, content, healthy. Set of users. And I was just hesitating on which word to use there because the Living Beyond Challenge refers to people who live, work, and play in buildings as inhabitants, mm-hmm. rather than occupants.
Okay.
They're not just passively occupying a space, that they're interactive, active agents. So their involvement in the building, in the ecosystem of a building, is really important. And it shied away from using end users.
Because
an end user is someone just uses the building to the end. Yeah, there's a circular.
Yes, it's very soulless as well, isn't it? End user.
Exactly. the final petal is the beauty petal.
Mm.
It's beauty and inspiration, really. And in there is all the biophilia.
Yeah.
It's one of the requirements. I think it's the only standard to do so to date, to make a biophilic workshop as a kickoff workshop for a project.
Yeah.
That's a mandatory requirement at the outset of a project.
And what does that entail?
That typically would entail bringing all project stakeholders together, so the architects, the designers, the clients, as wide as you can make that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to explore, how is this building going to have a relationship with nature?
Yeah.
And how's that going to work? And that goes back to what we were just talking about, Vashti, its orientation, its views, its, it's moving through that.
Yeah.
And there's some really good guides to help you through.
There was one on there that I don't know if we've mentioned, but equity.
Yep.
I don't know if I fully understand what that means in that context.
Well, two things that equality and equity within the project individuals. So we in the UK, we'd probably put the modern slavery issues into there and the way we go about constructing.
Uh-huh.
And indeed, how the building is put into use. And then we have the DDA and all the access issues as well.
Yeah.
So it's like a CSI for individual companies, which is where the JUST program I mentioned earlier comes mm-hmm. in. But it's also around the building itself. Yeah. Is the building equitable? So how does it relate to its local community? Or is it just put there like a fortress and no one's allowed into it?
I see, yes.
As City of London was and probably still is in places.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it open to all?
Great. So there was a few things in there that I wanted to sort of drill down in a bit more. I mean, mostly because I downloaded the standard that's available on the website because I was interested. Yeah, I'm building this tiny house, and I thought, oh, I wonder if what I can learn and implement. And so the water one was one that really leapt out at me because it's something I've never thought of. In my mind, it's always you get water from the mains, it goes back into the waste system.
Yep.
That is the way it's done. It didn't even occur to me that there was any sort of issue with that. And then it's led me onto down a rabbit hole of looking at all these sort of water filtration systems and how I could be self-reliant in that way. But I wondered the systems that you're using with filters and such seem to be scaled down versions of the sort of industrial water treatment. Is there an argument for doing things on mass being a more efficient way of doing things?
Yes, possibly. I would say it's a balance between the two, doing things locally and doing things on mass.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a very different view on water here in the UK mm-hmm. as to many other places which are water stressed around the world.
Yeah, and this is a global thing, isn't it? Living Beyond Challenge.
That's right, yeah. But I think even in the UK, new developments, especially housing developments, put a huge amount of stress on water.
Mm-hmm.
And we are wasting so much water. And within the sort of the wider context of, is it an infinite or finite supply? But we do spend a lot of money and a lot of energy and chemicals, et cetera, on cleaning water, which we don't use because it goes straight through the tap and down the plug hole.
Flushing our toilet with the most beautiful water.
Exactly. So we could take a much more responsible approach to the use of water. But at the same time, you know, we have more water falling on the UK than each individual house needs.
Yeah.
The water which falls onto a home is more than that needs. That makes sense to use some of it if we can.
Mm-hmm.
So we can harvest that, we can use it for grey water through toilets, etc. There is a requirement in the Liverpool Challenge that 100%. And that technology is improving. That we can cleanse water.
Yeah. So that 100% is including drinking water.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are exemptions because of various local laws.
Mm-hmm.
The Liverpool Challenge project here in the UK, the one in Lancashire, the Curdon Valley project, harvests as much water as it can, and that's used back through the WCs. But because it's a catering outlet, in essence, to produce drinking water, raises another level of permissions, of authority, and technology.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that one. How many, globally, how many sort of Living Building Challenge buildings are there? And sort of in the UK as well?
So there are different levels of certification.
Mm-hmm.
At a full living certification, which is all the petals and all the components, I think we're about 500 around the world at the moment.
Right.
But then we have far more, which have just gone for various petal certifications or the carbon certification.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't know how many of those are around the world without checking. But then in the UK, we have two construction projects. One has completed, the one in Lancashire I mentioned, and one down in Devon, which is a residential building, which is just about completing at the moment. And then we have a net zero carbon with the net zero ILFI's program, which is the Google headquarters in London.
Okay.
They're the ones which actually get through to being construction projects. We have countless number of people using elements from the Living Building Challenge within everyday projects.
Yeah,
I'm probably helping and consulting or provocateering on a number of projects which don't go all the way through to registration.
Mm-hmm.
But having that dialogue with these people, I think they say, okay, we can use that. We might not go for the whole full suite.
Yeah.
So we're slowly changing the way we do things.
Great. There's a few different certification programs of within the UK. How does the Living Building Challenge compare to those?
It's a question I always get asked. How does it compare to BREEAM LEED and all the others? And I don't like necessarily to compare it, because I think that they all have their own individual requirements.
Of course.
Yeah. But if anything, I'd say the Living Building Challenge takes off where the others get to the end of their scale.
Mm-hmm.
So this would Living Building Challenge would take off where BREEAM gets really difficult. That's the fun side of things. Sustainability is not easy. It needs to be a challenge. We need to think differently.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the RIBA, the RIBA, have just produced, I think last year produced their sustainability outcomes for their new RIBA plan of work.
Mm-hmm.
And within there, there's a very useful guide as to which of the existing standards would actually help a project a client move forward on those RIBA sustainability outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Living Room Challenge fares very well. In fact, it is the best performing to hit all the topics.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to compare them in terms of, is one more difficult than the other? I think the scope is really the thing to look at.
Yeah.
And the Liverpool Challenge is probably more robust and a wider scope too. There's a good number of sort of crossovers now between the various standards or crosswalks, as they've become called. So if you should be pursuing BREEAM, that one's not quite there. But if you're pursuing LEED, how far away are you in also picking up a Living Building Challenge tag? Or what would you have to do additional? What's missing?
Right.
If that's important to you. And some of those crossovers have become commonplace. And I guess like the Red List is now used by LEED. The Red List is now used by the WELL Build Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Declare as a verification route is now used by many standards and clients, actually.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, I consider myself to be fairly well-versed in sustainable building practices and was pleasantly surprised by some of the sections in the standard that pushed me to think further about sustainability and about how we can be designing better. I first heard about it probably 10 years ago. I saw Chris Magwood talk about his project that he'd done and tried to get it certified, and it seems like it's come a long way since then. I think 10 years ago he was saying there was only a few successful buildings, and he was. It seems like some of the issues he talked about seem to have been sort of worked out. I was quite pleased to see that it seems like it's an ever evolving document that's learning and feeding back.
Yeah, very much so. All registered projects go through. Or have access to something called a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Because Living Build Challenge doesn't say in all cases, this is how you do it. This is what you must be doing. So there's numerous routes to achieving mm-hmm. the imperatives. So there's a dialogue with a various bunch of experts, mostly based across in Seattle, but now around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have that dialogue with this work, with this past, come up with this new idea. And then periodically, all those dialogue conversations are reviewed, and then the challenge is updated. We're now on version 4.0, which was released in 2019. When I started looking at Living Build Challenge back in 2011, 2012 or so, we're on version 2. And it's got 2.1, 3, 3.1, 3.2, et cetera. So it's moved forward.
Is it? I'm thinking of this purely personally. I was thinking, well, maybe I can do my building, certify my building in some way. What sort of the sort of process for doing that?
Well, first thing, yes, you should.
Yeah, even though it's a movable home, I don't know if I could.
Yeah.
The place element becomes a bit difficult then.
That's right. There are ways of looking at that. I should actually also flag out for smaller buildings, and as a way into Living Building Challenge. Last year before, LFI released something called CORE,
mm-hmm.
C-O-R-E, which takes out the in the four Living Building Challenge, there are 20 imperatives. So CORE just takes 10 of those, 10 key ones,
uh-huh.
as a halfway house to help you get them. So typically the procedure is for you to register. Most people have great ambitions. We'll register for the full certificate and use that then as the structure and the driving
mm-hmm.
framework to go and cover everything.
Yeah.
And then I think as the design develops, as construction develops, they realize, maybe somewhere outside of our remit, we don't have the responsibility or influence to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's just too difficult for what the project may be. So those who don't go for the Living, then drop it back to either a PETL certification or the CORE certification.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. But it's, one of the other things that Chris said in that talk was that they pretty much considered it a full-time job for someone to be doing all the research, and so they had to have one person taken away from the build site, from the day-to-day business, just to research all of the things. Do you think that's still the case, or is it as more is happening, there's more information out there?
There's more information out there. That's not necessarily a fault of the LBC.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, in many ways, the supply chain at scale is not quite ready to do this type of regenerative building.
Uh-huh.
But we should really know what goes into our buildings. In terms of material tracking,
mm-hmm.
I think all the other stuff around the Living Build Challenge, most architects have got a handle on anyway. Yeah, we've got the technology and we've got the thinking.
Yeah,
it's not that often we bring it together and have a client who can afford to bring it all together.
Right. Yeah.
But, That tracking, which you mentioned, which Chris probably mentioned, is something everybody mentions. That, you really need to know what's going into the building. Because I think we're now better aware that the materials we put in our buildings are as important as the food we eat.
Yes.
We become very conscious of what we do eat. I think that will ease, though, as material suppliers.
When there's the sort of demand causing...
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know for the project here in Curtin, we would write to a material supplier saying, does your product meet these criteria, the red list?
Mm-hmm.
And we get the typical response, not sure, hope this helps.
Yes. Well, I found it a fascinating thing to look at, the standard. When I got into the materials is where I really... have focused my sort of attention historically, but I ended up on a map drawing ever expanding radiuses of how far away my materials could come from.
Yeah,
and just sort of with my fingers crossed that I'm looking at using cork facade, sort of insulating cork facade.
Okay,
and I was the biggest circle just reaches sort of northern Spain and southern France. So I'm hopeful that that's where my cork comes from.
Is there a option to use recycled cork?
I don't know.
Not recycled, but reclaimed.
Yeah, that might be.
Yeah, drink a lot of wine bottles.
I'd have to start now.
Just conscious of time, but to wrap the Living Building Challenge together, the project in Lancashire, which is the first one, I think is a great exemplar of what we can do. We need to learn how we scale that up to other buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But the design was by Barbara Jones, who you probably know from Strawworks.
Yep.
Yeah. So that, we have a sizable visitor centre and cafe, very busy outside the pandemic, a very busy, successful visitor centre,
mm-hmm.
which apparently has increased the footfall to the park, the country park, by a factor of 4.
Wow.
So people want to go and see this building, etc. And whilst they're there, they'll take a walk, start to appreciate what's on their doorstep, what's nature got to offer them.
Yeah.
So the foundations are made of tires. There's no concrete anywhere in the building. So that's a waste product being reused back into buildings. A lot of it was constructed with voluntary labor,
mm-hmm.
and some under training schools. Most of the timber, especially the cladding timber, was grown on site. But it's got some really nice
ideas
to it. And in terms of the circular economy, if necessary, the building could be taken apart, so it's demountable. There's no mortars or too many glues. All natural materials can be recycled and composted back into the land if necessary. And then the elements can be reused on other buildings. Yeah, the glazing, the air conditioning system, but ventilation systems, etc.
It's that the circular economy idea of using a building thinking of a building as a material store for future buildings.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily designed that way, but are you familiar with the butterfly model from the...
I'm not sure that I am, no.
From a circular economy. There's two routes to bring materials back into use rather than go to landfill or to waste.
Mm-hmm.
One is through reuse recycling, which is pretty straightforward. And then the other is back through composting materials to energy and that type of approach.
Uh-huh.
So we're hoping someone would like to do a sort of case study on the current value, which route the building can be taken once it's, hopefully it will never be taken apart, because you can replace all the bits on it as you go through. But should there be an end of life to the building?
Yeah.
Then we can do it that way. Yeah. And actually, that's the other interesting thing around the Living Building Challenge. The Bullitt Center I mentioned in Seattle has a design life for 250 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you think more into not quite deep time, but more than our normal 60 years approach.
Yes.
And the Curtin Valley here, I think Barbara mentions about 125, 150 year life.
That's great.
And along the way, you can change individual components, but to actually change the structure, that's the life of the structure itself.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A huge thank you to Martin for that. I really enjoyed finding out more about the Living Building Challenge. It's sort of given me maybe more questions than I want to ask. So maybe we can get him back on and we can really go deep into the different categories of the Living Building Challenge. As I said at the beginning, there are so many links to the things discussed in this episode in the show notes. So do dig into those. And do get along to one of Martin's Zoom regeneratives. They are truly excellent. You can find those on his website, which is fairsnape.com. Again, links are in the show notes. If you have enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could take a moment to share it, get it out to a wider audience. If you listen on Apple and have 2 minutes to spare, I would love it if you could write a quick review. That would be so appreciated. And finally, if you'd like to support the podcast financially, then head to the Patreon site, patreon.com/buildingsustainability. Get yourself lots of bonus audio and other gubbins on there as well. So that's it from me. Big love to you all. And until next time, bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.